Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Fresh Atlantic salmon portions, 7-ounce farm-raised, including marinated portions, just $5.99 each. Delicious Hass avocados or mangoes, 4 for $5, or just $1.25 each. This week's digital deal is the delicious Sumo Citrus, $2.47 per pound, limit 4 pounds. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
It's another Saturday in CCO land when we talk cars, more specifically problems you're having with your car, your truck, your van, and you need to bring it in for service. But ahead of that, you want to know maybe what's ailing, what's wrong with it. Obviously, more information is better. It's more power. So if you have problems with your vehicle and you want to talk to an ASC-certified technician from Lloyd's Automotive in the name of Nick Stoffel, you can call Nick or you can text Nick at the usual number, 651-461-9226. You can make it a call if you want to chat with him, or you can just send a text like some folks prefer to do. But keep in mind, Nick will be with us. It goes by so quickly, just about 7:45 this morning. So better sooner than later that you send us any kind of a car care question. Nick, good morning to you. How are things at Lloyd's this past week?
Well, good morning, Denny. Things are good. You know, like I mentioned off air, you know, the holidays are great, and it's also nice to see them kind of pass here. Having them on a Wednesday makes it hard to get the work week going, and, you know, everybody got their time off and time with their family, and this past week we kind of got back into the groove, and we're rolling again and trying to keep ahead of the schedule, which is always a battle, as you know, and looks like we might get a little bit of snow here this weekend, followed by a little more cold, so a nice winter cycle that we used to get accustomed to, and maybe we'll have a few more.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. It's only January 11th. I was going to ask you about, in fact, I started asking before we had to go on the air about batteries, and I think it was 4 or 5 years ago. I can't remember when I was at Lloyd's having a new battery installed, and it's great battery, been great. Those Interstate batteries are great. And I've noticed during these colder months, colder weeks, colder nights, that it's outside, and it's fine. It gets above 25 degrees, 20 degrees, it's fine. But then it starts to groan. So I put in my battery charger, and I checked it, and it said like 12.7 volt, whatever. What's the deal? The batteries seem to be okay, but why is it groaning and maybe almost didn't start? Are there other issues here?
No, not necessarily. You know, a lot of times I think what happens, as I mentioned too, because I have a similar issue as my vehicle's age, my battery's age, is that my commute, I'm very fortunate. I live about a mile from work. And if I just go to work and home, and I don't have any other thing going on, which isn't often, but if it happens, the battery doesn't get fully charged. You know, we fire the vehicle up, we have the radio on, we have the heat on. You know, I usually let it warm up for a moment or two before I go. So there's a lot of strain on the battery. You know, we're taking power from the battery to use all these items, but the car needs time for the alternator to fill the battery back up. So if you, like myself, and maybe yourself too, Danny, if you're not driving a lot during the week, you know, sometimes it's not a bad idea to take the long way to work, as I call it, or if you're going to the grocery store after work, if your commute is typically within a little small bubble of a mile or two, maybe you need to go to the one that's down the road a little bit further to give it the car a chance to fully warm up, kind of exercise itself, burn off of that moisture in the exhaust, allow the alternator to fully charge the battery, allow the brakes to fully clean up. You know, I'm not asking you to go out on the worst day of the year and drive somewhere you shouldn't be going, but if it's on a nice winter day, it's not a bad idea to put a few extra miles on there to allow everything to kind of work its way out.
I saw a video the other day. I was thinking about our show, and the guy, because you never know what's accurate or not on YouTube, but the guy said, I don't care what people say, I don't care what time of year it is, warm your car up for at least 5 minutes. Get everything moving.
Well, my kids tell me everything on YouTube is real, and I try to go the opposite. If it's on the internet, it's not real. No, it, I guess I would disagree with that. You know, I suppose you can talk me into parts of it why it makes sense. In the summer months, you know, definitely not. If anything, you may want to crack the windows and let the hot air out. But it, like we talk about this all the time, in the winter months, I truly believe after a few moments, once those fluids get flowing, the car doesn't care. It's mostly us, you know, and make sure the windshield's clear. There's more of a safety reason to let the car warm up. Make sure your windows are clear. You have some heat in the car so you're not chattering your teeth and you can focus on driving, not trying to keep warm. So that there's some things that are important to us. But as far as the vehicle goes, after a few moments, it's just fine.
Yeah. All right. Here's our phone number. It's also our text number. 651-461-9226. Nick, I promised our listeners who we couldn't answer some questions the last show. I've saved them, and let's pick up on some of those good listeners. Here's the first one. This past week, the tire pressure light comes on for a while, then goes off. Next day, it doesn't come on. Day after that, it does come on. I've checked the tire pressure. It's all fine. What do you think the problem is likely is? Now, we've had this, I think, questions, similar questions to this.
Well, we get these types of questions in the winter months. And what happens is, you know, as it gets colder out, a lot of times the pressures will dip a little bit. Now, keep in mind, once you start driving your vehicle, there's some heat created within that tire, which will allow the pressure to go up. So if you ever look inside the door placard, it'll give you a minimum PSI at cold. So if you're says, well, the door placard says 32 PSI, that's where I'm at. That's the you know, kind of the minimum. Just go up to PSI. You know, not a lot. Don't go 10. Don't go 15. 2 or 3 PSI just to get you off that threshold. So on that very cold morning, the tire pressures are still above that threshold. Keeps the lights off. Keeps everything satisfied. And then you go start driving. You know, like I said, it warms up. Your car, your tires will add 2, 3, 4 PSI as you drive and as they heat up. And then as it cools down overnight again, the pressures fluctuate. And that happens year-round. But in the winter months, when it gets cold and those molecules are moving slower, usually they dip down a little bit lower, which will make that light come on. So just add a couple PSI. I'm sure that's all it'll take, and you'll be just fine.
I'm going to grab another text before we break that just came in. Hi, Denny. Your 2016 Honda Pilot's key fob works perfectly, but the dash light comes on saying it is faulty. Also changed the battery a few times in it. What do you think is going on here?
Well, that one's a little tough. I guess the first thing I would try is switch keys. You know, use the other fob. Leave this fob at home. Use the other fob for a few days. See if it does the same thing. If it's doing the same thing, now we start to think we don't have two bad fobs. But maybe it's just the signal from that fob isn't as strong. I understand you replace the battery, but sometimes we'll still see that. It's also possible you switch the battery and the new battery, which, believe it or not, we put batteries in, still have problems. So maybe try another one of those little remote batteries. So first thing to do is switch the fobs, use the other fob for a few days, see if you have any issues. If you don't, it's isolated to that other key. Obviously, you can take it in. They can check for codes. They can try to check for a good signal. But the first thing to do, switch them. Second thing to do is try a different battery. The third thing to do is to bring it in.
All right, very good. Hang on, Nick. We're going to take a quick break here. If you have any kind of a car question, let's hear from you again sooner rather than later. Nick will take his leave about 7:45. So call us or text us with any kind of a car question you may have this morning, 651-461-9226. 17 degrees right now in the Twin Cities. We're heading with snow on the way to about 27 today. 1 to 2 inches of snow overnight. It'll end sometime tomorrow. Tomorrow's high, well, actually, it'll be falling throughout the day on Sunday. In fact, Sunday night, we're going to drop to about 2 below, 5 above Monday, 7 below Monday night, 7 above Tuesday, and then we're going to start warming up a little bit for a few days, 22 by Wednesday. In the meantime, it's overcast, 17 degrees from News Talk 830 WCCO. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to this portion of our car care show. Denny Long here, along with ASC certified technician Nick Stoffel, runs a place called Lloyd's Automotive. And getting some nice compliments here on Lloyd's Automotive. Not surprising. You guys do a great job. But Nick, for those that want to get some help from Lloyd's, how do we find you guys?
Yeah, if you ever need some advice or a little information before you take your car, and you can always call and ask. You can reach us at 651-228-1316. And if you happen to be out and about on Grand Avenue or at 982 Grand Avenue, which is the corner of Grand and Chatsworth, and then finally, I'd really appreciate if you check out our website, and that's LloydsAutomotive.net.
Very good. We'll get you that info before Nick leaves us, which is about 7:45. Call us or text us. Any kind of a car care question you might have, 651-461-9226. Here's a thank you from Judy and Kurt. They say thank you, meaning Lloyd's, for all your work on our GMC. You're the best. How about that?
Like unsolicited. Well, we'd like to hear it, and you know, we're only as good as our customers. You know, I mean, we've been together, Denny, for a long time, and you know, we truly do care, truly do try, and you know, we do make mistakes. When we do it, we do the best to fix it and try to keep as many people on the road as we can every day.
Yeah, you do. You do a great job, for sure. Another text that came in last week that we missed, it's a 2023 Hyundai Calligraphy. It's equipped with many options, Texter says. Sometimes the electronics don't operate consistently, and I was wondering if the computers need to be recalibrated periodically.
You know, that's a good question, and oftentimes there are a lot of updates associated with the computers. We don't necessarily recommend an update just to update. If we're having an issue, having a problem, there's a service bulletin that talks about some new software to remedy a problem, then absolutely we're going to go down that road. I think it's probably fair the next time you have your vehicle in, describe the problem, let them do a little bit of a diagnosis. At that time, they can look to see if there is any software updates that can kind of help with what's going on there. But I'm not a big fan of just updating to update, because there's been times in the past where you do one thing, it creates another issue elsewhere. So if things are working as they should, leave it alone. If we have a problem, if that update can help resolve that problem, then yes, we're going to go down that path.
Something I wanted to talk to you about that happened this week. My daughter, who has been in your shop many times with the various, you know, oil changes, etc., she, like a lot of folks, and in fact, it happened to me too, mice in the engine compartment that have chewed wires and all that stuff, causing, you know, many thousands of dollars worth of damage. My daughter had brought it to a shop, and they, what they did was they put in, which I think is a great idea, and I wanted to ask you about this, in order for to keep mice or whatever, critters, into by your glove box, all right, entering there, which they do, they put some kind of a mesh, almost like a hardware cloth, excuse me, because mice can get into, believe it or not, they can squeeze into a space that's as big as a number two lead pencil. That's how their skeletal system can squish down. Have you ever done that or heard about something like that? I don't know if it's put in by the firewall as you come into the glove box or what. Have you heard of that?
You know, I have, and you have to be careful there. You know, the reason why that's an access point, because that's like the fresh air intake where the air flows through the cabin filter into the heating and cooling system that gives us our airflow for our inside the car. And I don't have a problem if you take your time, do your diligence. We don't want to create any air leaks. We don't want to damage anything. We don't want to restrict any airflow. So if, depending on the vehicle, I suppose there is the space and the ability to get in there with some, like, you know, wire mesh that they're not going to eat through. The hard part, though, is to get it properly installed and sealed, because as you mentioned, you know, in those little nooks and crannies that a mouse can find its way through something the size of a pencil. So if you're doing this, make sure you take the time, you have the space, and it's properly installed, so you don't have, you know, you can have it 90% covered, but that's only as good as the leak. So just be careful if you're going to try to attempt something like that.
And those critters sometimes can be really hard to find. You know, those engine compartments are so crammed with stuff that you can't even see the nest sometimes. I'm sure you've run across that.
Absolutely, and I think the biggest thing to do come the fall time is, you know, when you're cleaning up your garage, if you park inside your garage, make sure there's no birdseed, dog food, any kind of reason for the mice to be there. You know, and if you're okay using some traps or some other deterrents, that's a good idea. You can look online. There's a lot of ideas about fabric sheets and different products. It's, you know, that's fine too. You can try a lot of things, but I think having the garage cleaned out, if you park outside, make sure all the leaves, you know, you want to make sure it's less enticing for these critters. If you happen to be, maybe you need to park a little bit further away from the grassy or the wooded area, so it's a little more difficult for them to find their way to your vehicle. So, yeah. You know, it isn't always so easy, but you have to try do something a little different because they're going to keep trying. They don't stop. Right. They need to find a warm place to go. And if it's your car, they're going to keep coming back. So
absolutely. Please ask Nick, Texter says, if he's dealt with the cam phaser issue on Ford trucks with a 5-liter engine. You know what they're talking about?
Yes. I'd say there's a lot of vehicles that we're seeing these types of issues. A lot of times it's related to oil. You know, that what it is the cars, as they've evolved, we started controlling timing with what, as he describes, as a phaser. And that's an oil-controlled component. And when they need to adjust the timing, the oil will flow. It'll adjust the timing of that camshaft with that phaser. So the timing chain, which we've always had, or a timing belt, kind of routes its way around the camshaft, crankshafts. That's what allows the engine to run. Well, what we've learned is we can adjust the timing by clocking those camshafts differently or separately. So we put a phaser on there to control that. Well, as I talk a lot about oil changes, with time and maybe not proper maintenance, and not always, it can also fail. We'll see where there'll be a little bit of sludge buildup. We'll see where there's poor oil flow. Or if it gets too hot, it'll get some carbon on there, which doesn't allow those things to flow properly or work properly. And we can see where those phasers will actually fail, which can make the timing be very off, which can make the vehicle run very poorly. And at a minimum, the check engine light won't come on, and we'll see some other issues related to that. So they can fail on their own, but I do truly believe good oil quality, frequent oil changes will kind of keep the timing type issues or those mechanical issues with the engine at bay the best that we can.
Very good. Hang on, Nick. We're going to take a break and look at that forecast. We have more texts, more questions to get answered here this morning on CCO's Car Care Show. 17 degrees in the Twin Cities. We expect overnight 1 to 2 inches of snow. We'll talk weather in a moment. News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to this portion of our Car Care Show. Denny Long here, along with ASC Certified Technician Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. Nick, we have callers and we have texters, and as you know, limited time. So let's see if we can't take care of business here. First up on the phone, Ross, calling from Waconia this morning. Thanks for waiting, Ross. What is your question for Nick?
Good morning. This week I returned home after being gone for a few days, and my 2014 Ram truck was dead. It would not start. I quickly jump started it. I had to get going, and then got to the destination, turned it off, and quickly checked to see if it was going to start again. I was just in a rush, and it did start up again. 6 hours later, when I came to the vehicle, of course, it did not start. Fortunately, a friend was there, and we got started. But the point here is that if there had been some sort of a battery indicator, battery life, battery quality indicator, of course, I would have known right away in the morning then that my battery has failed and that if I drive it, I'm going to expect that I'm going to have to jump start it again. So the question is, we have battery indicators on almost every electronic or battery powered device that we own. And yet in our vehicles, all we've got is that voltage. Well, ironically, the voltage regulator on the dash or the voltage meter on dash has a picture of a battery on it. But, of course, that has nothing to do with the battery. If I understand it correctly, it only has to do with the quality and capability of the alternator. So, therefore, that back to the question, maybe, or a comment, wouldn't it be a great idea if there was a way in which our vehicle could monitor the quality of the battery?
You know, I think that's a fair question. You know, there could be, you know, if you go back years ago, and the battery itself used to be a little sight glass would kind of give you an idea as the water evaporated, it'd tell you that the battery's getting old. But, you know, with technology, you think they can measure impedance, you know, because, you know, the way we used to test batteries was a load test. I mean, we're actually taking a carbon pile, we're putting a load on the battery, see what its capacity or what its reserve is. Well, now with this handheld test, I can kind of do a different type of math by measuring the resistance of the battery. And you would think that they could do that. Before we start the vehicle, once the vehicle's running, as you indicated, that battery light is really kind of telling you the voltage of the vehicle. So if the alternator's not charging, that light's going to come on. But I don't know why they don't give us a little heads up if our battery's getting low. You know, obviously the manufacturers and the parts companies are all about selling things. So you would think that there would be a way to give us a little bit of a warning. And I guess I don't know why. I would think that that'd be a nice thing that they could add to a vehicle. I think the concern might be, though, is if the car's sitting, there's a light on, that's a drain on the battery. So how do you have this system where once you start the vehicle or try to start the vehicle, it can kind of give you a heads up where, hey, we noted that the battery voltage was low overnight. It's not a bad idea. I just don't know how they would design that or program that into the car.
Yeah, good point. Good question. Thanks, Ross. Let's grab another call this morning. Joe's calling in from Monticello, I do believe. Joe, thank you. What is your question?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I have a F-350 Ford diesel. It has two batteries. If I should have to jump start it, which battery do I connect to?
I'm not sure if it actually matters, because what's happening there is, so if you're, you know, you wouldn't think you need to jump start the vehicle if the if you have two batteries, you have that much more capacity, right? You're still running 12 volts, but they're connected in a manner that you double the amperage. So if they're both that low or that weak, you can just, you know, disconnect it to the one battery. That'll give you that extra current or extra amperage to hopefully get that starter turning, to get the engine to turn over, to get fired up. Honestly, I don't know. I would think you'd have a little bit more of an indicator warning before you get to the point where both batteries are not working. So I would probably do a little more digging into it, maybe check the voltage of both batteries. Might not be a bad idea to slow charge them both, do them individually. I believe if you jumpstart the vehicle, disconnect it like you normally would, that allows you to add a third battery to the equation, which would be more than enough current to start anything.
All right. Good morning, texter says, 2007 Ford Explorer, 308,000 miles on it. Recently, the steering locked up, and I had it towed to my local shop. Turns out I needed a new tension pulley. It was only about $200 repair for the car. Runs like new. What does the tension pulley do, and why does it make such a difference now, and how it drives?
So I think what we're referring to is a tensioner pulley that keeps the belt tight. So if you go far enough back in time, we had V-belts, and they had an adjustable tensioner where we would kind of pivot that pulley on an axis, and we'd tighten the bolt to hold it in place. Well, that means that as the battery or its belts kind of aged and worn, they would start to squeak and become loose, because nothing's perfect, you know, forever, and temperatures and a lot of things that happen there. So we became up with serpentine belts, which is what we use now, and there's an automatic tensioner that's oftentimes spring-loaded, so as that vehicle's running, as we're turning on air conditioning, different accessories, power steering as the reference in here, a lot of different things are happening, that the belt tensioner can kind of keep that belt tight so it doesn't slip, and as it ages and wears and temperatures affect it, it always stays tight. Well, that spring, that bearing, they also have a lifespan too, that happened to fail in this vehicle, so that belt wasn't tight. The belt's not tight, your power steering pump is not spinning, creating that pressure to give the assist with the steering. Good thing you brought that in, because other things that could be run by that belt is, you know, the power steering, the alternator, which we've talked about today, a lot of cases a water pump. So you need to be careful. If you notice a squealing noise or a difference in your steering or a battery light, it could be because that belt is starting to spin, or slip, I should say, because that tension's not holding it tight.
Interesting. All right, I know we're going to run out of time. We have a bunch of texts that just came in, and I'm going to take those texts that we don't get and, again, open up the show with those next week. So we appreciate the patience of our listeners. Here's another one, though, before we run out of time. If you have to replace a frozen front caliper and replace all pads and rotors are good, must you replace both front rotors?
Case by case. So quickly, what we're talking about here is a caliper that's no longer releasing. Likely the piston has failed, or the slides or pins, something, they're not allowing that caliper to apply and release. If it was stuck in place, it could have worn poorly into that rotor. So what we would do is we would actually look at all the brakes, try to figure out if it's just isolated to that wheel, or is the other side not far behind, because you don't want to replace with all new in one corner and then have the other corner be right behind it. Now you still have a braking issue because they're not applying and releasing equally. So just do your diligence, careful visual inspection, and based on that, I would make a recommendation.
Okay. This listener put new CrossClimate two tires on a CRV. They lost over 1 mile in fuel efficiency, and wondering why.
If it happened over the winter months, it could be the makeup of the fuel is a little bit different. It could be because we let our cars run for a few more moments in the morning. We get a lot of those types of questions, is why is my fuel economy so bad in the winter? the fuel makeup does change a little bit, not as much as it used to, but also we let our cars run a little bit longer to warm up, which will burn some fuel, and that can affect the fuel economy a little bit.
Okay. Here's a 2000 Suburban. My wife told me it has been periodically sputtering for a week, and it died once. Now it won't start. I'm thinking a fuel pump. What are your thoughts?
Could be a fuel pump. You know, we would put a fuel gauge on. We would scan the computer, look for any kind of codes. If it was sputtering, make sure, obviously, it has fuel in it. I'm assuming it does. But if it's not the fuel pump, we look to the ignition system, like we're losing spark. Maybe we have a misfire. So I wouldn't rip a fuel tank out of a vehicle without doing some tests. But the first thing to do is check to see if it has fuel pressure.
Here's a quick one. I'm sure, not sure you can respond because it's this was not at Lloyd's. Please, why did it cost me $550 to get my 8 spark plugs replaced on my Silverado?
Well, spark plugs last over 100,000 miles now. The iridium or platinum, if they're made of, is very expensive. Labor costs have gone up, too. You know, the wages across the board have gone up, which people work very hard and deserve their wage. So, you know, the inflation we had a couple years ago, there's a lot of things that have happened that made a lot of things more expensive. And it's not just our industry. It's the world as we know it. Food's more expensive. A lot of things are more expensive. Also, depending on the vehicle, maybe not necessarily this one, but sometimes, you know, there's a labor guide. It might say it's 1, 2, 3 hours, but that's a guide. A lot of times in our climate, we get a lot of corrosion. You have to be very careful not to break the spark plugs. Maybe there's a situation there, one of those spark plugs was stuck and they had to use a little extra effort or some different tooling to get it removed. So a couple follow-up questions with that shop might kind of help answer that question.
Yeah. Could be a lot of variables there. Nick, we have to run. For folks, again, want to get in touch with Lloyd's Automotive, how do we do it?
Yes, sir. If you have a question before you take your car into your local shop, don't hesitate to call. We'll always help. 651-228-1316. And as you know, we're at 982 Grand Avenue in St. Paul. That's two blocks east of Lexington Parkway. And then finally, do check out our website, which is lloydsautomotive.net.
We will do that very thing. And let's talk again next week, Nick.
Sounds like a date.
Good deal. Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.